All right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our communication and messaging charge. We have a robust meeting today, and we're going to go ahead and I'm going to kick it over to Wendy if she can do a welcome.
Just hello, everybody. It's been quite a week. We have a lot to cover, so I would just ask for you to join us as we hear an update from Sable Nelson, Office of Health Equity, to cover a lot of the activity that's been going on. Sable, are you there?
Absolutely, I am. Good morning again, everyone. I'm Sable Kay. And primarily, I wanted to begin with centering and just bringing to your attention, there are some updates that have been made to this VDH vaccination website. So just wanted to walk you all through what some of the information that has been made available. I'm putting the website in the chat. Specifically, in light of the rollout and the new phases that have been introduced, just wanted to make sure that you all were aware of two specific tools that are new and eligible for folks. So we want to make sure that people as different localities are going to be in different phases. There is a survey of sorts that will help people to know which phase their county or city is in. So I wanted to let you all know that there's a phase by health district indicator, and you'll be able to see who's in phase 1A, who's in phase 1B, and then that can help folks to understand where they could be in line. So I'm gonna put this link to the vaccines by health districts in the chat. And the other piece that I wanted to share with you was related to once people know what phase their county or city is in, we also have a quick survey that will help people to know which phase they're eligible for. And so we are looking for folks. There are a lot of calls that are being fielded by the call center, and a lot of emails are being sent to central office and to the local health districts. So this is a tool that has been developed to answer some of those eligibility questions that people may have. So I wanted to share these resources in the chat with you so that you all can share it with other individuals in your networks. And I'm hoping that we can work with our communications partners to be able to make these resources more widely known, because they are existing here on the VDH website. So that is update number one. The next piece that I wanted to focus on with you all is just to provide a bit more of context in terms of where we go from there. And so as you all know, the governor held a press conference on Thursday. There's been a lot of movement that has been made as we begin to scale up and get into our 1B and 1C vaccination efforts, specifically wanting to make sure that you all are aware that under the direction of Danny Avula from the Richmond Health District, who is leading our larger Commonwealth-wide vaccine-related, those public-facing vaccine-related efforts, there's going to be mass vaccination sites that are being set up across the Commonwealth, looking specifically at areas that are more densely populated or that have high population centers. We don't want people to have to travel for hours upon hours to get to a vaccination site. And what we're trying to do is, once we look at that coverage map, also to make determinations based on, for those who may not be able to travel to a mass vaccination site, where there may be a specific need for mobile vaccination sites, that information is also being collected and determined. Specifically, what we're looking to do is to leverage the lessons that we learned during our testing efforts. And so we will be doing something similar in terms of creating maps, overlaying the concentration of the virus, overlaying considering the percent and types of vulnerable populations that are there and looking at the availability and proximity of community to potential vaccinators. So all of these items are under development, and I will have more detail that I can share publicly at our next meeting, but wanting to let you all know that we have mechanisms in place to try to vaccinate large groups of people serving both rural and urban, as well as suburban locales. So those are my big updates. And I see your comment in the chat, Karen Brim. Yes, these are pre-registration. There are conversations about how to connect this information that is being collected through this Jebit tool, the When Can I Get Vaccinated form, have it be connected to the local health districts. But that's a technological fix that's currently under development. But yes, this is a pre-registration, more like an informational piece, but we are having conversations about how to connect that information. Wendy, do you have a question?
No, when you're done, I did want to share information about some of the provider education efforts and outreach to health professionals when you're done.
Go ahead, absolutely.
Okay. Before we proceed, and I just wanted to share with folks, as we've already discussed, there are several components to communications. There's communications with the public, and we're going to get to that a little further down on the agenda. There's communication with vulnerable communities and those who have accessibility issues, and then there is provider education. There has been, it's been very difficult. Lots of providers across the state are frustrated. I have had many meetings and conversations with people who are really trying hard to address some of these issues. People who are trying to enroll as vaccinators. There is now the site has been updated, flow sheets have been added, welcome letters will be sent out to all enrollees. We have about 1,000 sites that have been approved. Newsletters, weekly updates will start going out to all those who have applied and are still in process. A best practices document has been completed this week that is being disseminated and posted. There are many pieces to this. There are webinars. We're doing vaccine safety panels. We've done, I think, six now. We have two or three more scheduled. I just wanted to make you aware that there is still an issue with navigability of information on the website for providers and getting information out to healthcare professionals. There is still an issue with this, but I do want to share that work is being done on that front. And I think when we hear from Deloitte, I believe they're going to fill us in on more of that. Is that correct? They're on the agenda.
They're going to be providing a summary of some of the data, some analysis that they did. But we can, and they're actually up. If we want, we can. Once you're done, we can get them to prepare that to share their information.
I'm fine with that, unless anybody has questions.
Okay, so with that, and I just want to acknowledge, I do see your the comment that is in the comment from Karen Brim. I want to let you know that it's not exclusively the Deloitte data that is going to be leveraged in making these determinations. This is a part of a larger team effort across several different state agencies. So it's my understanding that Dr. Avula has been having conversations with a variety of different agencies, including behavioral health and some of the other agencies across HHR. So it's my understanding that a wide variety of populations are being considered in terms of where these mass vaccination sites should be located and what accommodations need to be considered for those. But thank you so much for raising that. With that, the next item on the agenda is for us to hear from the Deloitte team to share some communication pieces. They've done an analysis as it relates to communications and would love for the Deloitte team. I believe we have Sun Rockwell and Mark on the line. If you all wanted to introduce yourselves and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Sable K. Hi, good morning, everyone. Would it be possible for me to be able to share my screen? To have access?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Sun Rockwell with the Deloitte team. I've been supporting the Health Equity Leadership Task Force since April as part of the COVID-19 response and bringing data and analytics to inform operationalizing equity on the ground. And I'm joined by several of my colleagues here today. We have Sarah Godby, who's going to share a bit about some of the work that we did for Fairfax Health District, accompanied by Chris Steno, who has provided the analytics behind some of the work that we're doing here. Mark Greathouse is our lead account partner for our Virginia work. And then we have Shrupti Shah, who is one of our key leaders in this service area, and Sean Conlon, who is the leader of our Deloitte Health 360 asset. So we are excited to share with you what we have completed for the Fairfax Health District. This is a very abbreviated version of the analysis. We have a much more in-depth analysis that we'd be happy to share with you as well. But in the interest of time, we'll go ahead and get started. So our conversation with the Fairfax Health District really started during the time as we were focused on supporting some of the testing efforts. And through the conversation and the analysis that we shared with Fairfax, they really emphasized some of the challenges in getting some specific populations to be comfortable with coming out and getting tested. So the problem statement that they posed to us is, how can we encourage testing among the Black African American adult population and the Hispanic Latinx population, specifically the primary breadwinners of households who are adult men? And so we said, hey, we've got some insights from our data, and we have a very strong capability around behavioral insights that we can bring together to help inform communications and outreach strategies that would be much more tailored than what they're doing already to be able to reach this population. So the approach that we basically took is we leveraged the Deloitte Health 360 data and gained a very good and deep understanding of the population. And then we drew upon some of the behavioral principles with our experts within the firm. And then we've developed some very specific tailored strategies that are focused on small clusters of the population. So you'll see as we share the analysis that it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all approach, a very tailored approach just based on the needs of the population. So I'm going to pass it over to Sarah Godby, who's going to talk a bit more about the work.
Great. Good morning, everyone. It's nice to be with you this morning. Just a little bit about myself is that I am a public health behavioral scientist, so focused on why people do what they do related to their health. So have been partnering with Sun and team to combine the insights from the data that we have in the Health 360 asset with understanding about behavioral science and health behavior. So knowing that there's lots of similarities too that might be applicable to the work that you're doing around vaccination. In terms of how we look at people's behavior related to testing and vaccination, we're very focused in behavioral science on motivation, why people do or don't do what we're asking them to do for their health and their ability to do it. And one very helpful, and we're kind of cutting to the chase here, way to look at that is by plotting their level of motivation or how they're motivated against their ability to do something. And to answer the question quickly, yes, this data is only for Fairfax. We plotted, did some analysis of the entire population of Fairfax Health District, tailored it to low income and likely uninsured, and came up with these various groups of these African American, Black, and Hispanic and Latinx population. And so you can see that there are various groups, that it's not a monolithic group. You can see, for example, that on the Black or African American graph, that you have groups 0 and 9 are very high in motivation and also very high in ability to be tested. And this is using the Health Prism data, looking at things like, do they have a car? Is English their primary language? Other factors related to income and, other reason factors that might help them to get to a testing site. So we're able to group these populations and also size them. So you can see that the bigger the bubble, the bigger the group. And we've also done some patterns here. We also looked at the ways that people were motivated differently and found that there are some groups that were very motivated by social factors. So their culture, their family, their religion was very important to them. Whereas there were other groups that were more interested in their own personal health and taking care of themselves. And so they kind of separated out naturally that way. So what we were able to do is to take the data and find out more about who make up these groups, and then able to pull out some insights combined with behavioral science principles to make some recommendations. And so this is an example of just one of the groups. We called this the Young, Healthy, and Tech Savvy group. And we're able to pull out information, especially around what motivates them, what their ability might be to be tested or to potentially vaccinated, and then also understanding a little bit more about their preferences as well as barriers that might keep them from being tested. And so you can see that with this group, they're the youngest of all of the groups within this population. Culture is very important to them. They want to be influencers. They are high on the altruism scale, but very low on family being important to them and religion being important to them. And so that translates obviously into how you might want to reach them and message them. You can also see that they're less likely than other groups to own a car and also to have internet access. And so we are able to translate this into some recommendations that might be helpful to your communications teams in terms of knowing that their health is very important to them, their health conscious. And so you might want to translate that and frame that messages around testing of being a way to take care of yourself. Because they're young, emphasizing gains that are in here and now can be very motivating. So that's some things that you can do. Framing this also as a way to show pride in culture. And so that can translate into some messengers and channels as well, instead of perhaps using religious leaders or using family as a theme for motivating them. You might want to focus more on culture and partnering with cultural organizations to get the messaging out. Also relying on their ability and their desire to be a social influencer and to post messages that they're being tested on their social media feeds. And then also, again, because they're relatively low on the ability scale, also making some doing some things to make testing easier for them in terms of helping them know where they can get testing, having permanent sites where they can rely on it, using mobile testing near job sites, barbershops, other places where they may hang out, helping with transportation, emphasizing safety nets, and offering incentives. And then we're able to kind of roll all this up, did one profile and set of recommendations for each of the major groups, and then we're also able to roll it up, if you go to the next slide, Sun, to kind of to show this information on a map to help. You can see here that on this map that this group tends to be in areas where there are not a lot of testing sites. And then also we're able to roll it up to the next slide to show at a very high level how these populations can be broken up, and then how bigger messaging strategies can be used for these populations. I'll stop there and see if there are any questions.
And I would just add one thing, that this this type of mapping can also inform some geo-targeting media campaigns. So if you look, we can provide it at a census tract level. We can also map it to a zip code. So if, thinking about some specific geo-fencing in your media campaigns, this can be information that can be leveraged for that.
I have a question, please. I think it's all well and good that this work has been done, and I appreciate it and applaud you. How is it being used?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we provided the details for the Fairfax Health District, specifically to the communications and outreach teams. They were looking at how it can complement what they're doing.
And has it been used? Has it been used? I mean, I'm not aware of efforts to apply this analysis. I'm not aware of a communications effort that uses this information. Is there one?
We'd be happy to follow up. We provided this information just a few weeks ago, so we haven't gotten details on how they've applied it yet.
And to who, when you say you're giving it to and they're applying it, who is supposed to do that?
The local Fairfax Health District. So the reason why I'm bringing this, having the Deloitte team, or requested through the chairs for the Deloitte team to share this analysis that they did for Fairfax, is this is an example of the kind of work that they can do. And I also think that some of the messages and subpopulations have a direct correlation to groups that we're going to need to focus on for our vaccine efforts. And to the extent that you all thought that the methodology and this type of information would be helpful, I just wanted to expose the group to this information, and to the extent that you all thought that it would be helpful, we could make a recommendation for the larger VH communications team to request for a similar analysis, but have it tailored to vaccines and specifically to those areas that are showing slow upticks or slow vaccination, rates of vaccination, so that we could try to target messages to those areas to increase vaccine deployment.
Sable, and that's a good analogy, you know, to have that. I guess that if we have this data, we have to make, and we have it going across the Commonwealth. And of course, as I said in the chat, it's different in every region. We have to ensure that the contractors, the vendors that are creating the messaging, listen to what the data is saying and producing. What
right.
Otherwise, mm-hmm. This is null and void to all of us.
Mm-hmm. So this is like a part of the puzzle. Like, our communications effort is going to take a multifaceted approach. And one of the things that Lin Sun introduced herself and her team indicated that they have been working to support our health equity leadership team efforts. And one of the things that we have been, that's been the hallmark of our approach, is having a data-driven approach to health equity. And this is just an opportunity about how we can leverage available data to share with the communications vendors, to share with the VDH team in terms of what audience segmentation they should be looking at, but also because of the way that the Deloitte team can get very granular into the data down to the census tract or, zip code, that will be especially helpful for geo-targeting of specific messages and also helping to figure out which radio stations serve specific zip codes and things of that nature, just helping to have a more comprehensive and data-driven communications plan. So this doesn't get us to beautifully developed messages for the highly health-motivated, low to medium ability people, folks that are out there in the Commonwealth, but it gives the communications team the information that they need to have a more tailored and creating a communications product that will be best suited to the folks who are living here in the Commonwealth. And Fairfax here is an example, but this could be replicated in other jurisdictions that have the need, to the extent that that's something that VDH, that's necessary. Does that make sense?
And And just to add on, so this was specifically focused on the population who are hesitant to come out and get COVID testing. And so we use that that as the foundation for the analysis. But we also have models that predict people who are likely hesitant to come out and get the COVID vaccine. So this can be tailored to the COVID vaccine and kind of likely reasons for the different populations who may lack confidence in the vaccine, and how do we increase confidence.
Does anyone have questions? Anybody have additional comments or questions?
Yes, Wendy, this is Beatrice Zimmerman, and I just want to go back to what you were saying, because, you know, graphs for governments and so forth, they look beautiful, but I think you have an excellent point. How is this being applied? And, you know, there are some jurisdictions that are now becoming frustrated, and basically a graph may show that there's some efforts going, but I want to know, you know, number one, the health district. Are these going specifically to people that are going to be implementing vaccination for the community? And then the other question is, when they develop graphs like this, I didn't get the chance to see what they have, you know, the graph on the Hispanic or Latino community. But I would like to see, I mean, how do they reach the conclusions that they have, and how much outreach goes into the communities themselves? Who do they access to pull, you know, those assertions? So all of that. And then, you know, the for instance, the city of Virginia Beach, we feel that we are lagging behind, and everybody is trying to speed things up and so forth. So, you know, to have at the end the report as to how that improved, not just informed, but how that improved, and how do we measure that actually that improves the vaccination and the practicality of what our communities need. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Beatrice. Appreciate your comments. Karen, your hand is raised.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Great, thanks. I just wanted to add a couple things. One is, I think I'm maybe sensing, feeling myself and maybe sensing from the group that this is very high level, and we understand that this is what drives, you know, sort of figuring out a direction. There's a lot of, we truly respect this work. It's been the foundation of being able to, you know, get a picture of, you know, the populations of greatest concern. But having said that, I think that there's a little frustration factor that generally we feel that there's not enough baseline, simple, straightforward, plain information being put out to answer people's very foundational questions. And do we know what they want to know? What do people already know, and what do they still need to know? What are the questions that people are asking? Have we done surveys to say to a person, what would you like to know about the COVID-19 vaccine? Do we have the answer to that question? The answer to that question is the message that we need to be putting out in simple sentences, bullet points, 15-second videos, taglines, hashtags. That is what needs to go out. People are hungry for information, and we're not giving it to them clearly enough, quickly enough, or plain enough. Simple, one sentence. To get information about your vaccine phase, go to VDH, blah, blah, blah. In order to register for vaccination, contact your local health department, period. That's what people need to know. And we're not putting out information that's as simple as that. How we get there, I don't know. But we need to push that out, because that's what people, I get the sense what people want to hear. The other thing that I wanted to point out as well is that from working with the Access and Functional Needs partners, I would caution against only using testing as a base for making comparison to vaccination. When you're dealing with populations who have been, for all intents and purposes, sheltering in place since the beginning of COVID, because they don't even want to go get a test because it might expose them to getting COVID if they don't already have it. You can't compare that to people who may come out of hiding, for lack of a better word, in order to, for the sole purpose of getting a vaccination. And so I just want to, you know, encourage that at some point you make the assumption that there are people who have been waiting just for vaccination, and how do we reach them? How do we get that information to them? And how do we get them to the vaccination point? Because those are the people that have mobility issues or transportation problems, economic disadvantages, that have been waiting and not getting tested because they're like, I'm holding out until I get the vaccine. We need to reach that population as well as the population that all your calculations are bringing in. So, sorry to be on my soapbox. I just want to make sure that we don't lose sight of the forest for the trees. We get in the weeds on a high level, and we forget that there's, you know, Joe Public waiting for simple bullets, and we need to give it to them, like, right now, like yesterday.
As can be seen in the comments, there is support for your soapbox. I think these comments are extremely well taken. We hear you loud and clear. This leads to our next discussion, but I see that Tripti has her.
Shaw had her hand.
Tripti, yeah. Hi, thank you. I just wanted to respond briefly to Karen. Absolutely agree that this analysis doesn't seek to replace, you know, messaging of the core things that everyone needs to know and the simple facts. It's just that even when you get some of those out, what we know from public health campaigns, but also from political campaigns and lessons from other kind of wide range messaging, is some people have more skepticism about certain factors of a message than others. They have different abilities, they have different things to motivate them. And then, so in addition to those blanket messages that everyone, you know, it's almost like the core, and then there's the nuanced messaging to make sure that the last stragglers who aren't getting the message or aren't covered by those, you know, don't have questions about like the core facts, but have different barriers that are holding them back, that we understand, we first find out who they are through the data, and then we are able to craft the ideal message that is most likely to flip them towards the behaviors that we're seeking to create. So Karen, absolutely agree with you. Love your soapbox. It's not replacing those mass messaging. It's then the kind of follow-up and the nuance for the targeted individuals.
Thank you for that. Sable, can you put up this, I will share with the group that we, Gaylene and I and others, have been troubled by the lack of response to our repeated requests for clear information, for culturally appropriate information. The elephant in the room is the article that was the press articles that you've all seen, I'm sure, regarding the use of Google Translate to translate information that was on the website. This committee has had many discussions about the need for linguistically appropriate, accessible, and culturally appropriate information. So we drafted a statement. Can you put that up, Sable or Jasmine?
I will. Before we switch to that, though, I did want to thank the Deloitte team for their presentation. I know that this has been planned, and we are trying to be responsive to the moment and also responsive to the needs of the community. But I just wanted to thank them for taking the time out for making their presentation today. I just wanted to thank them for their presentation. I know we're gonna get ready to have this conversation. And this feeds into the type of audience segmentation and the ability to know, not just as it specifically relates to testing, but specifically as it relates to vaccine messaging, understanding where hesitancy lies and why people are hesitant and where that reluctance comes from. That helps to inform this next conversation
and the document that you all will be seeing on your screen shortly. But before we transition to this conversation, I just wanted to thank the Deloitte team.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Our pleasure. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
And there we go. You all should see the document on your screens now.
So this is a draft that review, and we have had, just so you know, Janine Guidry and Rebecca Vargas Jackson. Unfortunately, Rebecca Vargas Jackson could not be here on this meeting this morning. She is attending to her 101-year-old mother right now, but she has reviewed this. Janine, Gaylene, Sable, this is something that is a draft for your review and the discussion. We would appreciate your thoughts on this document. And my personal feeling is that it should go to the governor and to Dr. Carey to address the need for an improved, clear, simple, appropriate communications effort. So it begins with, is there a way I can scroll? No. Okay. So maybe I can just share my screen. Okay. This is not the most recent one. I'm sorry. Can we take this down, please? I'll share my screen because this is not the final copy. Give me a minute.
While Wendy is doing that, I think we need to share that Wendy and I have had several conversations with leaders, you know, with, you know, the secretary and the commissioner, you know, on the concerns of this group. So we have been really working on the behalf of this group, sharing our concerns of what's being done. The data that Deloitte gave was great, you know, but I agree with Karen that, you know, it was high level. The majority of everyone on this group are on the ground. They know what the needs are, you know, and we're just ready to get the information out there.
Okay, can everybody see this?
Can you enlarge it a bit, please, or enlarge the print?
Okay, hold on. Oops. Wait a minute. Okay, can you see this? I'm not sure what you're
seeing. Yeah, that's better. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good.
So it begins with the fact, this is our charge. This is simply reviewing the vaccine advisory work group was established to gather stakeholder information. This is word for word the charge we were given. And that we have identified a critical need that requires urgent action. This next paragraph, the Virginia COVID-19 vaccine plan, comes right out of the vaccine plan that was issued in October 2020, stating that public health messages and products will be tailored for each audience and developed with consideration for health equity using plain language that is easily understood, presented in culturally responsive language and available in languages that represent the communities. This was issued and is the essential charge of the vaccine advisory group. However, as was highlighted in the press, and this link takes you to the most recent article that was in the paper last night that talks about the fact that Google Translate was used for translating where inappropriately vaccine information. There's an urgent and unmet need for linguistically appropriate, culturally competent vaccine information for the Spanish-speaking community, as well as for many others with limited English proficiency, limited literacy, and otherwise limited information and or online access. As has been shown, the pandemic has exacerbated gaps in healthcare for vulnerable and underserved communities. Language discordance and information inaccessibility are well-established causes of vaccine hesitancy and are major impediments to vaccine uptake. So to address these inequities, you can, I don't have to read this to you, promote equitable to mitigate the negative impact of these remediable barriers. This committee is proposing the following key components: establishing a bilingual health navigation phone line in a culturally and linguistically proficient manner, establishing a vaccine navigator call center to handle the unmet and escalating need for vaccine information, launching a culturally tailored public service announcements and a media campaign to inform Virginians of the creation of both the bilingual phone line and the call center, utilizing HIPAA compliant, widely available mobile app technology. There are apps that are available on any smartphone that bring up an interpreter or someone who can do American Sign Language. They can see the person. There is technology out there that would allow us to have appropriate interpretation live and on demand at vaccination clinics. Instead of supporting older technologies, which are very inefficient, we also ask that training be provided to address the use of information accessibility, readability indices, health literacy, 508 compliance, as well as culturally competent and linguistically appropriate vaccine information. And we urge that to meet these goals and to achieve the shared public health imperative of vaccinating all Virginians, this subgroup urges that the above stated critical need be met. So we welcome all feedback, all thoughts, and how and with whom to share this position statement, because I think we can acknowledge, especially with what's been in the press this week, that there is an urgent need.
I want to just kick it off by saying that Wendy and I have had this conversation. We was going back and forth with this yesterday, and this is great. I just don't want to make sure that we don't lose sight of not only, but of us, the vetting part of what we do. And that's to Karen's point about getting messages out in a simple manner and it's being run across us. If this Spanish, translation was run by this committee, we have experts on this committee that could have caught this. You know, that's what we're supposed to be doing. And so I want to make sure that, you know, as part of our ask, that we don't lose sight, that they don't lose sight of what we're supposed to be doing in terms of vetting.
I think that absolutely makes sense. And I would love for us in the time that we have remaining to, I know that there's some, I see a hand raised, or I think that Dr. Elmore would like to make a comment as well. But I just want us to utilize the time that we have remaining in our meeting to fine-tune these lists of specific asks, so that when we send this memo out to the VDH leadership, that they have concrete items that they can, steps that they can take, one, and two, items that we can hold, that we can follow up on specifically. So if there are any other pieces that people would like to add in terms of our action steps, I would love for us to be able to flesh those out a little bit more during our chat today. Dr. Elmore, did you have a comment or question that you wanted to make?
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
We sure can.
I have three things, and Wendy, you'll have to figure out, because when it goes small, I can't see it. But three things: where it says 508, we also need to put Title II and Title III of the Civil Rights Act, because those are requirements, not just 508.
Title, say it again.
Title II, and it's Roman numeral II, and Title III, because one goes to private providers and non-government agencies, and one goes to state government agencies. So Title III of the Civil Rights Act, and I may have to look up the exact which code it is, but anyway, I can get you
okay.
That.
One request is what I struggled with a lot is keeping this to one page.
Right, agree, yeah. But the Civil Rights Act actually carries, ADA, 508, and Title II and Title III are actually the ones that carry the weight on it in different parts. And where you have readability indices above that, I think just because so many people don't understand that, put IE grade level 5, which is what I think the Commonwealth is going with.
I don't think the Commonwealth is, yes, I agree, but I think we need to keep this short. The fact that I have talked to communications team members who don't know what a readability index is.
Yes.
I mean, you know, we can't, this, so this is just the highlights. We really need to get into the weeds with this stuff, but I cannot tell you how hard we tried to keep this really short and focused, because I hear you.
Well, I agree with you. That's why I was saying put in IE grade 5, because they don't understand. They don't understand how to go to Word and pull it up. But if you don't want to, that's cool. I'm just offering suggestions. And my last one would be to not just focus on Spanish-English, but to put the top 5 languages in there, because we don't want them to think they can only do Spanish when we have worked really hard to get VDM to at least put things out in the top 5. But
okay.
They're just my observations. You guys make the final decision because you all know who you've talked to and who you've included and stuff. So
yes, I will.
Cool.
I'll wordsmith that. Okay, we will. Yes. Other thoughts?
This is Mike Royster. Something that comes to mind with this is whether it'd be valuable for there to be a checklist that for each, you know, communication strategy or messaging approach that's developed, there's a checklist that goes through all of the key aspects of what needs to be considered as a part of it. And that as the communications teams develop these strategies, they're expected to complete this checklist to verify that they've considered all of the key points. So that as it goes forward, we're hopeful that those things have been addressed, or that they're at least cued in that they need to address those before those messages go out.
I appreciate that thought. There is, as you know, there is a checklist available. It's on one of the NIH, there's a readability checklist. And what I was thinking about was trying to submit with this document some links to those to a readability index, to a checklist. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think if there's things out there, that's great, that cover all the key components that seem to be raising concerns consistently. And that I think the other piece to it is that then there's this expectation that it is used and this document, this checklist is completed as a part of that whole process before the messages or whatever strategy it is implemented.
I appreciate your thoughts. You know, I think this, what we're asking is really an initiative. There will be a need to how this is operationalized will be very challenging, but I felt like this is an opportunity for the committee to be heard. So, you know, I appreciate your comments, and you know, I'll try to figure out how to do that.
I do want to say just to thank you for the comment. And I see Karen's hand is raised and she might be getting ready to mention something similar. There is training,
both Karen Brim for the Access and Functional Needs Partners and through the Health Equity Leadership Team, there's already just-in-time communications training that has been created. It's available on the Virginia Department of Emergency Management website that walks folks through the kinds of these, so that these issues that we're talking about, addresses a lot of those pieces there. Also, we have a health equity guidebook. Right now, it's just tailored for contact tracing and for testing initiatives, but the first part of that was a standalone communications component in terms of what steps folks need to take in terms of making sure that their communications are accessible. Even though that document is tailored toward contact tracing and testing, those principles could be applied even in this vaccination time. So we are looking to update that just to make sure, and perhaps that could be something that this group works on, is updating that checklist to ensure that we're covering all of our bases and making sure that we, our communications partners, know the steps that they need to take in order to ensure that the messages and the deployment of those messages is done in an accessible way.
But how do we get the communications partners to utilize these? You're saying the information is already there.
Mm-hmm.
What can this committee do to help promote the use of the tools that exist?
This is Karen. Can I interject just a second?
Go ahead, Karen.
Mm-hmm. There's a disconnect here. We have a subject matter expert panel that's been working at the request of EDH with the high-level vendors that is rolled in from a group that, from the very beginning of COVID, Dr. Vargas Jackson and I, Dr. Underwood, and various other people were contributing to communications and all of that. Anyway, that's evolved. And that person who's in charge of that is Kelly Vance. She needs to be a part of these meetings. On the other side is that VDH has its own communications that's not really vendor level, but is generated from inside of VDH, and some of that communication could be clearer. And that would be Maria Repis. I would like to request that both of those individuals come to at least every other meeting of this. We need them to be plugged in. They are the audience that we need to get this to, because they are the ones in charge. And if we can't get them to come to this committee, then that is an issue. So again, I don't mean to take the floor and hog all the time, but please invite Kelly Vance and Maria Repis to contribute to this conversation.
Kelly Vance has been invited to every meeting, and her team.
And they have, and I do want to acknowledge, we do have a Communications Director Maria Repis and Kelly Vance, they have been invited to the meeting. The subcontractor to Vance has provided updates. That's through the SADAL group that have given updates to this group. There has been a decision that's been made that in lieu of a formal report out, that they would be sharing electronic versions of their weekly pieces, but also in the event that Maria or Kelly cannot participate, it's my understanding that we have VDH communications team members who are participating on this call. I'm seeing that, and then perhaps it might be helpful for folks to hear, or I know that I see Tammy Smith on the line from our VDH comms team. I see Lori Andrew Spear on from our communications team. So I know that even though Maria and Kelly are not on, we do have those other members of the communications team who are on. And Tammy or Lori, please correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that you all back brief Maria and Kelly if there are any particular information that needs to be voted up to them. And they're also on the distribution list of our information. It's available publicly as well. Gaylene, I'm seeing that you have some comments, or is that Tammy there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Tammy. I'm here. Yes, I will take your message back, and I typically do. I guess I sense that y'all sense that there's a disconnect. And well, I guess in our defense, I will say the materials that are being produced they go through the health information team, they go through the communications team. The health information team sort of looks at it for scientific accuracy. And I do believe they look at it for readability, comprehension, whether it's, you know, it's simple language, that sort of thing. But I will certainly take your concerns back to them and express that, you know, you don't, maybe they need to go to that checklist. I'm not sure what checklist they're using. They may be using the NIH checklist. I do know they review all the materials, the fact sheets, the shareables that we offer in our communications hub. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
With the greatest of respect, and I do mean that, I know everybody's working hard. I was showing someone, if you cut and paste what has been posted on shareables and other documents on the website, if you simply cut and paste the wording and put it in any readability index, you will see that it is always at 11th, 12th grade, and sometimes college level. It is, it hasn't been done. I don't think people are using readability indices. I don't think they're attentive to literacy levels. You know, one of the big discussions, and I know work is being done, is separating out what information is for the public and what information is for the world of healthcare professionals. But what is accessible to the public is not user-friendly, as Karen has been saying. So and this committee has not other, the I'm glad to know that Karen and Sue, I'm not sure whom else you said, Karen, I'm glad to know you're on the review committee, the what's it called, the SME?
Yeah, it's Dr. Vargas Jackson, and I was just asked because of the role that I've been playing, and there are several other people. Well, I can't remember exactly who. And again, those have been to vet things. They're ready to go out the door from vendors. And this has not been about vaccination. I will make that clear. The messaging that I have looked at has been general mitigation, wear a mask, you know, that sort of thing. There's been some on flu and childhood vaccination, because that was prior to when we even had a COVID vaccine to talk about. I personally haven't seen any messaging that's on the vendor level that's about the COVID vaccine itself. So maybe they are not there yet with that, you know, messaging. That is the issue as well. We're behind the curve on that. But
yeah, mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I do know that the Advanced Citadel team did share creative, not in the subject matter panels, but they did share the questions campaign with this group to provide some additional feedback. But what I am also unaware of, and perhaps Tammy or Laura, you all may have a better understanding of this, I'm not sure whether we've gotten to the point where that's been approved and it's been operationalized, because those were specific communications messages being developed for the vaccine campaign, but I haven't seen, we haven't gotten received an update as to when those answers to those most often asked questions will be deployed in the field.
Let me add something real quick. Wendy and I were on the SME committee, and then they removed us because they said it was getting too big. And when we saw creative, it was about masks and everything, and that was like 2 months ago or whatever, or maybe a few weeks ago, then we were removed off of it. This committee is supposed to be vetting messaging before it goes out, before anything, and we're not seeing it. I know the SME looks at it. We were on it, but then they kicked us off, but we're supposed to be looking at it. I cannot stress that enough, what our purpose is supposed to be.
And I think that I know that we're trying to keep the document short, but perhaps in terms of trying to resonate with the spirit of what you were just mentioning, Gaylene, is making sure, I know that we have the charge on there, but there is a formal mechanism for the review of communications mechanisms. I don't think that we are I think that it just needs to be clearer what the role of this group is, because right now, just my personal opinion seems that there's a bit of a disconnect between the charge of this committee and how the committee is functioning in that review process. So perhaps we need to have more clarity and have more members of the team to be a part of that feedback mechanism, that when there is new creative, specifically vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine specific related creative, that this group, it be shared with this group for feedback.
I strongly agree with that. And it's not just about me and Gaylene, it is this committee who is giving its time to participate in this effort, and they're not being given the opportunity. So we can try to wordsmith that document, and we will share that with you all. But I think we'd like to get it out right now. It seems like the moment to take advantage of all of the negative press to point out where the greatest needs are.
This is Susan. If you want to push it out, the one thing, and I put it in chat, haven't heard it picked up, is we need to impress upon the governor and the secretaries that they need to make this mandatory for all state agencies, not just VDH. Yes, VDH is on the forefront of this now, but until the governor and every secretary in the governor's cabinet makes this mandatory of their staff and makes them understand, Virginia is at the point that we could be in major lawsuits from civil rights, Department of Justice, and several others for non-compliance. And so I think maybe putting the word mandatory in there, or putting some of that in there if you got room, might be helpful. But until we get that in Virginia and get the upper leadership to understand the importance, you know the name. If it's not in my ballpark, I don't pay attention to it. So FYI.
Thank you. I think we're out of time. Any other, please feel free to email Sable or Gaylene or myself if you have thoughts. We will send this document out. I'll wordsmith a couple of things reflecting your feedback. Any other thoughts?
Hey, Dr. Klein, this is Tammy, VDH Communications. I did email Maria Repis, who's my supervisor. She did say they have a plan. They're discussing it to be more responsive, and it's underway. So whatever you send out, can you make sure you copy her as well?
Sure,
or I'll make sure she get it. I'll make sure she gets it. Thank you.
All right. I know everybody's busy and where time is up. Anything else, Gaylene, Sable, anybody else?
Will you send a copy to this group when you send it out so we know it's gone?
Sure.
Our next meeting will be Friday, January 29th. And as Wendy said, if anyone has any questions or any ideas, please reach out to us.
And everybody, please stay safe.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.